Okay, my name's Erica and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Erica.
Let's see. There we go. I'm truly grateful to be here tonight. I've only had a little over 24 hours to be nervous about this, so that's always good. Okay, I don't make eye contact either when I speak. It's so weird. Okay, I've been sober since December 15, 2008. And definitely a direct result of working the 12 steps that were just read with a sponsor and going to meetings and working with other people. You know, I have a spiritual toolkit today, and I've pretty much been doing the same things that I've been doing since I first came in. Let's see. I'm so nervous. Okay, thank you. You know, I get so nervous that my blood pressure goes up and I kind of can't see. but that's not the case today, and my throat gets so dry and all of those things. Like, I suffer from that. But what I love to do, I love to tell people what to do, so I don't know why that's a thing. Yeah, right? Okay, so what someone told me when you tell your story is, I talk about how it was fun, then it stopped being fun, what happened, and what it's like today. So I will, you know, I'm not from Texas. I was born and raised in Chicago. Thank you. Awesome. Texas, I live in San Antonio now, so it was a second home. We'd come down here for summers and everything. That's just where my parents were from, and that's what we did. You know, I can tell you that I was raised in a home where there was alcoholic drinking and issues, and it just was something that I didn't let affect me, I guess, then, or I had my coping mechanisms, but I'm an alcoholic today, so I guess it did affect me. Goodness. I remember, you know, my family parties here in Texas, and every time we'd come down here, that was, you know, party time for my parents, more my dad than my mom. My mom's super normal. I could be the president of Al-Anon, though. But any time we'd be down here, you know, my family, they drank hard and they drank fast, and I learned that. One New Year's, I was about maybe 10 years old, they had lined up a bunch of shots, and they were getting ready to take them, and when they took those shots at midnight, I took one as well. And my mom looked right at me, and she was like, "What did you just do?" And I said, "I just did what they were doing." But I remember that was the first memory, really, with, I guess, drinking, that I had that feeling of wanting more, and that burning sensation in my chest. Like, I just was like, this is awesome. But I didn't drink from 10 to when I got sober. You know, I just tried to stay under the radar with my parents because I had two older sisters that were pretty bad. So I was like, I got to be the good kid. And I did. I did very well in school. I stayed out of trouble. You know, I didn't, like, I followed the rules that they had that existed, but no one followed but me. And, you know, I started drinking and smoking and, you know, things. when I would come down here to Texas to visit my family and hang out with my cousins, who were pretty bad kids, too. So, you know, it would happen here and there, but it wasn't, like, alcoholically at that point. It wasn't until later in high school, like when I graduated high school, that I started drinking heavier. And I think it was because I was like the first in the family to graduate, to go to college, all those things, like the first of everything, that I was like, I can do whatever the hell I want at this point. So I did. And, you know, it started slowly but surely. Like, I started staying out all night. You know, the drinking almost, like, first it was every weekend, and then it turned into, like, this or that. And then it was time to go off to college. And this was one of my first memories of that, that when we are remorseful, you know, that cycle it talks about. So I had my parents drop me off the first kid to go off to college in, like, my family, really, including my cousins. And they were just so happy and so proud, and I just couldn't wait for them to leave so I can get the party started. And they left. And today I still feel so sad about that, you know, like not taking in that moment, but I can't go back in time. But I remember my random roommate was like, hey, I have a bunch of friends here from high school. Let's go to a party. And I was like, yes, that's what we're doing. I didn't unpack anything. Like, I just was like, we're going to go party. I blacked out. I lost my phone, and I came, like, someone walked me back to the dorm room, and my roommate was like, where have you been? What happened? All this stuff. And let me tell you, this is the first time I met this poor girl. So she was already half, like, worried about me and, like, taking care of me. And that became a pattern for me. You know, I had the friends, but they were either taking care of me or yelling at me, one or the other. I drank to get drunk. So, like I said, like, it was a time it was fun. I love the way that alcohol made me feel. It made me feel like I was just the hottest shit in town. And, like, you know, it just made me feel like I had arrived every time it started. And I don't know what arrived is, but that's where I was when I was drinking. So, you know, some people get their second chance in college. Like, that was where I had my second chance to be the bad, or my chance to be the bad kid. So I barely passed the first year, and I remember someone was like, C's get degrees, and I was like, yes. That is true. So, yeah, I finished my first year, the second year. You know, I had my crowd of people that I hung out with and a fake ID. So I did the whole bar scene every day I could. I loved it. It was my favorite thing. Like, I barely went to class, but the first thought I had waking up in the afternoon was like, what are we doing tonight? When am I going to get my next drink? Like, how is this going to happen? Let's go, kind of thing. And I had a group of friends that I could do that, but it wasn't the consistent group. It was one or another person. So they didn't really see that I was drinking this much because I wasn't doing all of that with them every day. But with one of them, I was. But somehow I made it that second year and went into my junior year of college, and I, you know, proceeded to make more friends, I guess you could say. And this one friend in particular liked to sell things on campus property that were not legal. So I was like, you can get me things, and I can probably get them for free. So I became best friends with, like, one of the biggest drug dealers on campus. And, you know, we partied all the time. And one time he asked me if I can help him run an errand. Well, that errand included us going to, so my school was in a small town in Illinois, and he's like, we need to go to this other small town Labor Day weekend. And I was like, great, that sounds like a great idea. We were drinking and smoking, whatever, on the way there, and there was a checkpoint. And this friend had thousands of dollars on him. And at this point, my parents retired and moved to Texas. And I was in Illinois, and they bought me a car, and it had Texas license plates. So we got pulled over. They smelled the alcohol. They smelled everything, and they checked the car. They found everything, and my friend refused to admit that it was his at first. And I just was a mess. And the cop, I was like, it's not mine, I swear. And the cop was like, you have all this money, you have, like, packaging for things, and he's like, and you have Texas license plates. Texas is next to Mexico, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, God, this small-town cop really hit the jackpot. But eventually my friend, we were there for I don't know how long, it just felt like a lifetime. He finally admitted, and he got arrested, and I got a ticket for illegal transportation of alcohol by minor. I thought it was good after that. So I bailed him out, and we went on with our lives, partying and doing whatever. And this was, again, my junior year of college. So what did I do? Oh, yeah. So I kind of was going to class here and there. I was living off campus with a few friends, and there was this rumor going around that the cops were busting, or if you had a fake ID, don't go out. And I was like, oh, okay, this is where I could be good. You know, I'll just stay in. And I stayed in one Saturday night, decided to go to Wendy's, and the way to go to Wendy's from my apartment was like an illegal one-way turn, you know, the shortcut. And I went, and I got pulled over. So, of course, I get in trouble. The one weekend, I decide to stay in, and the cop asked for my ID. I didn't have it, and he's like, ma'am, can you please step out of the car? And I was like, what is happening? And he said, your license is suspended, and it's illegal to drive with a suspended license. I have to arrest you. And I just was, like, mortified. I didn't know what to do or anything. And, I mean, I was like, I'm getting arrested. I'm not even drunk, you know, or anything. but, okay, so I waited for the female cop to arrest me. It was the first time I felt that incomprehensible demoralization, just a tiny bit. I called a roommate, she bailed me out, and I just, like, first thing I did was, like, let's stop at the liquor store, and we did. I slowly stopped. After that night, I felt so alone because my parents were in Texas, and I had this secret from them. You know, I'm Mexican, like, we don't have secrets in my family. it was killing me, you know, and I got arrested, you know, I had no money, I was failing classes, and then, like, I slowly, completely stopped going to class, and then I was like, oh, I don't have money, so I sold my school books, and this was around January or February of 2006, and what happened? Oh, I finally called them and told them that I just couldn't do this anymore and I'm depressed and I need to leave school. I told them everything that happened and they came and picked me up and I left. It was during spring break. All my roommates were like in Cancun or something and I moved out. And this is where I look back today. I could see that pattern of, you know, the geographical change. I didn't think that I had a drinking problem. I just thought that if I left, this will help it, everything. So we packed up my stuff, and we, took everything from Illinois and moved me down back to Texas where they were living. And, you know, I was just down for a few days, and then I had this smart idea. I was like, well, I need to get a job because school, I can't just enroll in school in February, or when is spring break? April. So I had the smart idea of getting a job, and I was like, well, I need friends as well, so I should get a job at a bar. And I did that. I went to the sleaziest bar in San Antonio, Texas, which no longer is open. Like, there were shootings and all that stuff there. That's where I went. I got a job as a cocktail waitress, and that was, again, like I'm going to talk about, like, how it was fun. You know, it was so much fun. I made all this money, but I drank it all away the same day that I made it. I didn't have bills to pay, so I was like, whatever. So that was like 2006 going into 2007. I slowly moved from like cocktail waitressing to bartending. And man, if I can talk about I have arrived, I arrived. You know, there was like, it was just so glamorous, that lifestyle. It's not. I could tell you that today, but I thought it was, and I thought that I was just like, I'm the shit. Like, I'm making all this money. I know all these people. I get to drink for free everywhere I go. This is it. But it really felt that way. but that just was not the case. So it slowly stopped being fun at that point. Like 2007, late 2007 to 2008 is just like where I started, you know, really blacking out on a daily basis and people yelling at me more than taking care of me, losing friends left and right. I You know, I couldn't keep a relationship for the life of me. I don't have like a memory of having a relationship with my family at this point. I tried to go back to school again, but I became a college dropout for the second time. And it just wasn't working, but I kept drinking, and that's when today I could tell you, like, that's when it started to really become a thing where I was depending on the drink or whatever I can get my hands on. It was a daily thing. That first thought, when am I going to get it? You know, it started over again, and it was stronger, and that's all I thought about. I hung out with people, and the people I hung out with was like, what can I get out of these people? That is exactly why I hung out with you. I wasn't really nice, but I put that out that I was like the nice girl and this or that, you know. But when it came down to you or my alcohol or whatever, that's what I was going to pick. Several relationships, like, I can't trust you because you're doing this. And I'm like, I don't blame you. That's what I said. I'm not going to fight for you. It just was, that was my pattern, like my cycle of life. You know, I was irritable, discontent, and then like I just had nothing to fix that other than that ease and comfort that I get from the drink. You know, as soon as I woke up, I was like almost in panic, like, when is it going to happen? But I was like, oh, wait, yeah, I'm a bartender. It's going to happen as soon as I get to work. Or if I'm off, don't you worry. It's going to happen right after I have breakfast / lunch. Late lunch, you know? So that was happening. Like, I was bartending, but then what started happening is that I was getting fired or did embarrassing things at work that I would just like either quit before I get fired. So I started like working from bar to bar. And, you know, it just became that another pattern too, you know, like, I do great at this job, I make money, then I start drinking at work, and then I, like, do something embarrassing, so then I quit, and then I'm like, oh, here's another bar I could work at, you know? I did that for some time, and finally, there was a bar that I was very guilty of, what's that saying, like, shit where you eat, or eat where you shit? So I finally met someone, and I was like, yeah, you know, he might be worth, like, not cheating on or whatever. And that didn't work out. But, you know, I really gave it a try, and this was in 2008. Like, we worked together, and I was like, you know what? In order for our relationship to work, I think I need to go work at another bar. And that was not the intention. I was just like, I'm getting too jealous, or all my regulars are getting jealous that I need to go. So I found another job. This was the last bar I worked at in 2008. And I loved that environment. Everyone there was a long-term employee. And I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what I've been wanting. Like, these friends, like this fellowship amongst them. Like, this is exactly what I've been longing for. So I worked there for a bit. It was around like Halloween that I started working there. And what happened? Gosh, this poor guy. I was on and off with this guy, and it was around the holidays, and we were off at this time. I was so lonely. I lived with this girl that I had known from another friend, and she drank like I did, but didn't want to drink with me because, I mean, you need someone to take care of you. And and so we rarely drank together, and if we did, like, it'd be a really hot mess. Like, we'd be on, oh, man, we'd be one of those videos you'd be watching today on social media laughing at the drunk people, like, trying to get the key and the keyhole, like, all that. We were just a mess. But we, it was around the holidays, and I was super lonely. We had our holiday party. This was December 14, 2008. We had our holiday party. The boss took us to the Spurs game. And I remember not so much. that night. But I remember having that feeling like, oh, God, I want what they have. And, like, a lot of them, again, like, they were long-term friends, and they were in relationships, and, like, long-term relationships. And this is just so something I never had. So I ended up going back to the bar that we all worked at, which most of us did, and, like, they went off to their significant other's Christmas parties. And, like, everyone worked downtown, this whole group, you know, and their significant others. So I ended up getting really, really drunk at work and crashing all their parties. And they're like, why are you here, Erica? And I was like, I have nowhere to go. And they're like, okay, take a shot here and then go back to work. They all told me that. I think there was like 3 or 4 parties that I went to. They didn't want to be around me. And I guess I didn't get that point until, like, you know, being sober. But I went back to work, and at this point, I was blacked out. So the rest of the story, this part I'm telling you, is like a collection of what these people have told me. So I was super blacked out. I woke up the next day, afternoon, and I had a voicemail. So again, remember, 2008, we didn't have iPhones and stuff like that. So I like opened up my phone, the flip phone, and looked at these voicemails, and like it takes like forever for the text message to load, so I just did that. And I had a message from the on and off boyfriend saying, you stupid B-word, I should call the cops on you. I got fired from my job off the clock via voicemail, and then like my parents are like, hey, where are you? What's going on? And I was just like, what happened last night? So I called a coworker. She said that I just got so wasted that she tried to drive me home after I had assaulted a customer, which is why I got fired. And I tried to jump off the highway, which is why I had bruises all over me, because she was like pulling me back in the car. Then when I got home, I stole my roommate's car to go to that on and off boyfriend's house. And we got in a fight, and as I left, like, so he owned a convertible, an older one, that still had, like, the plastic stuff, you know, like the plastic window and hood. Well, I ripped up all that plastic stuff with something, I don't remember, and left. And he was just like, I should call the cops on you. And I was like, you shouldn't. After I called him. So I got fired for assaulting someone. I don't remember that. I like totally ended things with this guy. And my parents, I called them back and I just said, like, I don't know what's happened. Can you come pick me up? I don't know where my car is. So they came and picked me up. We went downtown and drove around for a little as I try to remember where I parked my car. We found my car finally, and I broke down, and I was like, can I come home with you? And they said yes. So I went home with them. I don't remember really like much there either, but I remember going straight to bed. You know, they still had my bedroom, and I slept for I don't even know how long, but my mom would come check on me every so often and like bring me Gatorade or something. I basically detoxed at their house. Like, I got so sick. I was like vomiting. I couldn't keep anything down. You know, the DTs, because I was drinking every day, and I went from drinking every day to nothing for hours. and a few hours became a night. And then finally, so my last drink, yeah, that was December 14th. And then December 15th was when I, you know, the sobriety date. So that, it was Monday, and then Tuesday I was still sleeping. And finally, Wednesday night, I was, like, able to think and put together a sentence. I had a computer in that room. Again, we can't look up everything on cell phones back then. So I looked up AA. I had that, like, moment of clarity. I don't know what came over me. But I looked up AA and saw, you know, AA has a pamphlet where it asks like 21 questions on the back. And it's like, do you black out? Do you do things that you regret the next day? Can you have more than one drink, or can you not have more than one drink? And it's like, no, I can't. You know, I said pretty much yes to everything that classifies you as an alcoholic. So I went ahead and looked up meetings in San Antonio, and it had this directory where it's like women's, men's, big book. I had no idea what I was looking at, but I saw something that said young people's, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I saw another thing where you can be like smoking, non-smoking, blah, 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 whatever. And I was like, ooh, smoking. And I was like, I will only go if there's a meeting, a young people's meeting, and it's smoking. And the next day, there was a meeting, a young people's meeting, that had smoking, and I wrote down the information. It was, you guys, it wasn't me. This was all God, totally. So my mom came into the room when I was, you know, doing all this research, and I was like, I think I have a drinking problem. And she's like, you think? you know, she's had to deal, this poor woman has had to deal with, like, blackouts, me driving home drunk, you know, fights. I had no shame. Like, the way I drank with friends is how I drank at family parties. Like, I learned from them. I drank hard and I drank fast. So, you know, there are many times where I got, we were just talking about this last night, when I was drinking at a family party and my dad and I got kicked out of the bar because we got in an argument, and I was like, I learned this from you. Like, you know, like my husband was talking about the Dare commercial or something where he's like, where did you get this? And he's like, I learned it from you or something. So, like, they're not the reason I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic for my reasons. But so anyway, I went to that meeting, and that was my first meeting, my first desired trip, and I've been sober since. So I don't remember a thing that was said in that meeting. I remember leaving my cigarettes in the car purposely. I had a plan, you guys. Like, I was like, this is not for me. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm going to leave. So I left my cigarettes in the car so I can have an excuse to leave. And they had a break after the meeting, you know, how it works, the chips and everything. And they had a smoking break. So I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go get my cigarettes out of the car. And these women are like, no, you're not. And I was like, yeah, yeah, I'll be back. And they're like, no, you won't. So they pretty much put their claws in me. They were like, where did you go to rehab? What's your drug of choice? Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I don't know you. And I don't need to answer any of these questions, but as I tell you this, I didn't say any of these things. I was thinking this. I was like, uh-huh, yes, this is what I did. I don't know why I'm here. But it really was because I just was so lost and so broken, and I didn't know what else to do. So I was just crying and listening to them and answering every question that they had. And I think that those women saved my life, because if I would have gone to get my cigarettes, I wouldn't have returned, and I wouldn't be sober today. And the stuff that I was doing and the people I was hanging out with, the trouble I was getting into, I definitely believe that 100% I would not be alive today. I was a blackout drinker who drove all the time. Like, I raved about that. I'm the best drunk driver ever. You know, I would get in fights with women, men, bouncers, everything. But if it wasn't for those women, like, I would not be sober today. They gave me a phone list. They told me to get a desire chip. I got a desire chip. And they told me to text or call someone. So I text someone. I took that way, for sure. And, like, it took me 10 days to text because, again, it was a flip phone. Not 10 days. But I did text one of the women on there, that phone list. And so that was a Thursday. She told me about this party that this group of young people were having the next day, and she said, you're going to go. And I was like, no, I'm not. And she said, yeah, you are. And I went. I went to this White Elephant party, and oh, my God, these people were sober, and they were smiling and happy and just happy, joyous, and free. And I was miserable and crawling out of my skin, and it's just so uncomfortable. But I stayed there. That woman was not at that party. But I stayed, you know. I text her and I was like, where are you? She's like, oh, I'm not coming. And I was like, oh, okay. See, that's when resentment really started. So I gotta get sober. So I, you know, I just did the things that that person asked me to do. I eventually met up with her and asked her to be my sponsor. She guided me through the steps. I did not put up a fight, you guys. I was like, she's like, okay, you're going to start praying. And I said, how? She told me how. Like, instead of putting up that fight of saying why, I was like, how? And then she's like, you're going to read this. And I would read the big book, and I'd be like, what the fuck did I just read? What does this stockbroker have to do with me, you know? And so eventually we started reading the big book together, and she's like, and I was like, wow, I am that guy, you know? I started to relate to everything that we read, especially that part. I think it's about in more about alcoholism, where it's like, why can't he just drink wine, or why can't he just lay off this, or why doesn't he just drink beer, blah, blah, blah. That was me to the T. I was like, if I take an Adderall, I won't black out. Or if I just drink shots and water without beer, I won't black out. But the thought of not drinking never crossed my mind. So, you know, I was in that big book. I never thought that I was an alcoholic, but today I'm so grateful that I am an alcoholic who has found Alcoholics Anonymous or the program of recovery. So I started working the steps. Step one just was not hard. I had nothing to lose, so it was easy to see that my life was unmanageable. I had $50 in my bank account. My roommate asked me to leave, so I moved back in with my parents. I had no job. That on and off boyfriend definitely was not talking to me. I didn't have a relationship with my family. I was a two-time college dropout. You know, and I was like, yeah, my life's unmanageable. What's next? You know, and then we did two and three. What are you willing to turn over? And I was like, everything. I don't have anything, but I'm willing, you know. And when it came to the fourth step, I was thorough. And, you know, I wrote down everything. I was embarrassed. And what my sponsor said was, there's nothing you have done that I have not done, or even worse. And I was like, all right, let's do this. She was a crazy person. I loved it. You know, so we did the fifth step, and she just, nothing. It didn't faze her at all. And I was like, but I did this. And she's like, and? Let's go on. So I was like, all right, cool. After the fifth step, you know, I had that feeling like the weight lifted off my shoulders, and it was amazing. I really, truly felt God at that point, where I was like, I am walking hand in hand with my Creator. Like, I'm sober. That moment of clarity, you know, I am so grateful for it, you know. But what I'm super grateful for today is that spiritual awakening. I can't tell you the exact moment it happened, but I will say that I had this moment where I was like, oh my God, I haven't been obsessing about drinking. This is crazy. So that obsession to drink was lifted while working the steps. You know, it says that in the promises, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, all those things happen. We do six and seven. I'm a liar. I'm a cheater. I'm a manipulator. We all know that. So, you know, I do six and seven. And when it comes to eight and nine, like, that's truly the gift. Like, making that list, asking for that willingness, and then doing that work, making the amends. My favorite definitely was my mom. I had that fight or flight feeling, you know, where you're just about to throw up or run. We were at church. She just liked to do her, like, she was like, I just want to thank some saint. I don't remember. that you're sober. And I was like, all right, let's do this. So we went, and I had that moment. And I made the amends, and I was like, what can I do to make it right? And, like, tell me, like, how my actions have affected you. And she said, I'm just so happy that I don't have to sleep with the phone next to me. And I was like, okay, cool. It was way more dramatic, but I'll just leave that out. But, you know, just working the steps, and, like, family members, friends, you know, employers, things like that, it's been a gift to be able to do that. And I've stayed sober, like, one day at a time, you know, the 10, 11, and 12. maintenance and like working with others, that is definitely like the highlight of my recovery or my life itself, is like working with other people. I get to do that. I get to give freely what was given to me. And it really is a gift, like watching the switch go off and like watching the fellowship grow amongst people is so cool. But staying sober over years is also heartbreaking at the same time, because you see people go in and out, and then like people that go out don't come back, and then like you go to funerals and stuff, and it's just like, fuck, it's still out there, you know? It's not easy, you know, it's not all great things staying sober, but it's totally changed my life, and it's a great gift. You know, I've worked the steps, stayed sober, and I ended up going back to school. That was one of the financial amends I had to make, because I was like, well, I'm just going to let the loans go in default. I'm a college dropout. And my sponsor's like, no, you're not. So I was like, okay, cool. Well, then I guess I'll start paying these loans. And she's like, no, we should probably do more than that. And I was like, no, by the time I graduate, I'll be like 28. That's not happening. And then she said, you could be a 28-year-old with a degree or without. And I was like, okay. I did that. I went back to school. It was hard because I did 2.5 years of college, maybe three. I don't know. I collected enough credits to be like a junior/senior, and I was like, where am I? But I did it. I changed my major like halfway through, and I graduated I had a degree now. I met a boy on AA campus. He wasn't the first, but I met a guy, and like he's definitely that sex ideal that I try to become, you know, that God helped me work towards. And we were married today. You know, I'm married. I have a relationship. I'm so incredibly close to my family. It is the greatest gift. Like, I will do anything for them. No, that's a lie. Like, my mom lives really far. So if it's like really inconvenient, I'm like, well, can you meet me halfway? But you know what I mean. Like, I will do whatever I can for my family. We have an incredible bond. I unfortunately have a sister who's actively alcoholic, and her oldest child is actively alcoholic. And I, in sobriety, have had to call CPS on them. Their children were removed, and it's just been the hardest thing. That's also a lie. The hardest thing in sobriety, my dad unexpectedly passed away last year. And man, you know, I heard stories about people who, you know, did AA the same day that happened, and that was not me. You know, I fell apart. I went over there, my mom found him, like he had a heart attack, and it just was like, I still remember every moment of that day today. And you know, it was hard to tell people in AA, but you know, I told one person and those messages were coming, they were flowing in. And again, like I wasn't the person that went to AA, but AA did not let me get away, nor God. People came to my parents' home, brought food, started a GoFundMe for my family, you know, like to pay for the services. It was actually so God. You know, you meet people in AA, and sometimes your friendships, like guys, you kind of have a breakup here and there, right? Personalities. I had a girl that I didn't talk to for a couple years, and we like made amends to each other earlier that year. And she's the one that started the GoFundMe for my family. She's the one that was like, if you've ever been to their house, or if you've ever met Erica, or this or that, and that was just enough. You know, my husband, my parents were not good with money at all. And my husband was like, he told me that he had this thought where like, man, how are we going to pay for this? Like we, as in him and I. He thought, hey, I don't know what he could tell you if you want. But, you know, and that GoFundMe happened. And these people showed up and they're like, tell me what you can do. Like driving all the way to my parents' house, bringing food. And my mom just was like, I don't think I could have done this if it wasn't for your friends. And I was like, I don't think I could have, you know. Staying sober and having that fellowship, like, it's so important. And your desire, like, my desire chip, it says unity, recovery, and service. Man, that unity, it's when you put yourself out there, people will help you. You just have to be willing to accept that love. It's not easy to ask for help, but you have to if you just, you know, I came in here so broken and didn't know how to do life. Actually, I didn't want to do life. I guess it's part of the story I missed. Like, I didn't have the guts to kill myself, but I drank just a little bit more so that I wouldn't wake up the next day. But that just didn't happen. God had a different plan. So this fellowship, you know, God, Unity Service, I have a sponsor today still that I meet with and super accountable. You know, when my dad passed away, I was just going through the motions with AA. Like, I was, like, getting on my knees still, going to meetings, but God was not there for me. Or God was there, but I was like, uh-uh, not happening. And this year has been a totally hard year. Like, I participated in, like, drunk behavior, and I finally got a new sponsor, and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to stay sober if I don't start doing the steps differently or do something differently. And this woman, Evelyn was, I heard her at a conference, and she's like, all right, let's do this. And man, does she call me on my shit. You know, I needed that. I just celebrated the 10 years last weekend, and she told me, she's like, I didn't think you were going to make it to 10 years. And I said, me too. All I could say is, like, I think what's helped me is, you know, I'm not invincible. I'm not cured of alcoholism or addiction. I'm going to be an alcoholic to the day I die, but I've learned to stay transparent, honest, and open-minded. Like, if someone suggests something to me and I may not like it 100%, I'm still going to try my best to do whatever you're saying. You know, if you start telling on yourself and you, like, have to keep telling on yourself, it almost gets embarrassing that you kind of want to stop doing these things, right? So that helped me as well. You know, like, being humble and teachable has really helped me. Like, I have today, just like everyone here, I am not an exemption at all. Like, I have to do everything that you're suggested to do. Because if I don't do these things, I'm going to get miserable enough that I'm going to take that drink or drug, whatever, you know, it may be. It's not easy staying sober, but it's definitely worth it. And if, you know, you're struggling, and I know that a lot of you are new, it's just don't quit before the miracle happens. Like, it's so worth it. The life I have today is incredible. Like, I'm capable of loving and receiving love, you know, being, like, contributing to society. Like, I was just a hot mess when I came in. But today I feel like, you know, I help out wherever I can. And so I have a home group. If you're ever in San Antonio, it's the Friday Night Fix meeting at 7:30 at St. George. It's great. It's a mixed format. let's see. You know, I work with sponsees. I have that sponsor. And I go to meetings. That, too. Like, just because I'm 10 years sober doesn't mean I can get by with one meeting a week. Like, I get to as many as I can. And if I'm not going to meetings, I'm not helping anyone, you know? So, you know, I share in meetings when I don't want to. And I'm totally okay with telling people that I'm not okay. That's it. Like, I can't pretend that I am, you know, just because I'm sober whatever amount of years, even if it's, like, five or whatever. When I had five, I put my sobriety on a pedestal, and my sponsor was like, have you ever been sober before? And I was like, well, no, but I should not this. And she's like, you should not should yourself. And I was like, all right, I could do that. I'm still working on that today. But I'm really, really grateful to be here tonight. I'm sorry I was a little all over the place. I know it's not easy staying sober during the holidays, but I will say it's totally worth it. Thank you.